You're sitting at your desk reading yet another headline about artificial intelligence.
Yeah, they're everywhere right now.
Right. And it's always about AI automating some workflow that, used to require an entire department of highly skilled people.
Exactly. It's not just data entry anymore. It's complex, skilled work.
And if you are being completely honest with yourself, there's probably a little knot of anxiety right there in your stomach.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it is the absolute elephant in the room across almost every industry right now.
You are looking at the sheer velocity of this technology, and you're wondering, like, where do I fit into all of this?
People are definitely watching the ground shift under their feet. They're quietly asking themselves if they are about to become obsolete.
Well, what if we completely flip that anxiety on its head today?
I love that idea.
The mission of this deep dive is to show you that a clear, proven blueprint already exists. A blueprint for the exact kind of person who is actively thriving in this environment right now.
And we are pulling our insights today from a really fascinating essay. It's titled The Super Individual: Why AI's Future Belongs to Architects. And it's from the AI Field Notes series.
Which is such a great piece.
It really is. And the author grounds this essay in something incredibly valuable, which is actual friction. They aren't just theorizing.
Right, they're not just an armchair philosopher.
Exactly. They draw on their own highly practical experiences as a solo builder, and then they pair those personal trenches with frontline Silicon Valley observations from David Schell.
David Schell, the ex-LinkedIn executive, right?
Ex-LinkedIn, and now he's the CEO of Walnut AI.
And for some added context, David Schell actually recently laid out his whole framework on that prominent Chinese tech podcast, Tech Early Know.
Yeah, and the essay author essentially used that interview as a springboard to map out what it takes to actually win in this new era.
Okay, let's unpack this, because the author kicks things off with a reality check that honestly made me sit up a little straighter.
Yeah, the essay points directly to the recent massive cuts at the company block. Right. They eliminated 46% of their workforce.
46%. That's massive.
It is wild. But crucially, this was not framed to investors or employees as some temporary restructuring to, weather a bad macroeconomic quarter.
Which is usually what companies say.
Right. But Jack Dorsey, the head of Block, explicitly stated that the savings from those cuts are being reallocated straight into AI infrastructure.
Oh.
And he made it very clear that the human headcount is not coming back.
Companies are finally just saying the quiet part out loud. AI is replacing headcount right now. Today, it is no longer this hypothetical scenario scheduled for 5 years down the road.
No, it's happening right in front of us.
But this is exactly where the source material pivots away from that whole doom and gloom narrative. It points toward a massive structural opportunity.
Because while traditional corporate roles are being hollowed out, the essay notes that over 30% of startup founders are now solo founders.
30%.
Yeah.
That is a staggering shift in how businesses are actually born.
It completely rewrites the fundamental math of building a product. I mean, think about what it took to ship an MVP just a couple of years ago before this current wave of generative models.
You had to assemble an entire orchestra of specialists.
Exactly. You needed a back-end engineer to handle the database, a front-end developer for the interface, a designer, a product manager to keep everyone aligned, maybe a data analyst.
And just managing the calendars of those five people is like a full-time job.
The author highlights those massive coordination costs. You had endless Slack threads, daily stand-up meetings, JIRA ticket negotiations, constant communication overhead.
Half your startup's runway was burned just trying to get the team to agree on what they were building before a single functional line of code was even pushed to the user.
Yep, but today, that immense friction is just evaporating. A single person can execute the entire stack.
And the author actually brought the receipts to prove this, which I love.
Oh, yeah, the personal examples are great.
He built a project called Pan Pan Mao, which consisted of 10 fully functioning shipped applications built in just 29 days.
Entirely solo.
Solo, using Claude Code. And they also built Mio, a working voice companion app, going from a completely empty repository to a live product in just 4 days.
Four days is just
It's like
nuts.
going from managing a massive, slow-moving construction crew where half the day is spent holding meetings about the plumbing to just having a magic wand that builds the house as fast as you can describe it.
And when you have that magic wand, execution is effectively infinite. And more importantly, it's cheap.
Right.
But if everyone suddenly has access to a wand that can build houses instantly, what stops everyone from just building mansions?
That is the big question.
If the actual writing of code or generating of assets is no longer the bottleneck shifts entirely to the user's brain.
The bottleneck is us.
Exactly. And the CEO of Walnut AI actually completely changed his hiring metrics because of this shift.
You know, you would naturally assume the CEO of an AI company is scouring the market for master prompt engineers.
Oh, totally. People who have memorized the documentation for every single new AI tool that dropped last week.
But David Schell isn't looking for any of that. His entire hiring framework is built around identifying what he calls systematic thinking.
The essay brings in a brilliant observation from Naval Ravikant to explain why that is.
Oh, I love Naval's take on this.
Naval points out that as these foundational AI models improve, they are actively adapting to the user. They are getting exponentially better at parsing ambiguous instructions and inferring intent from really messy inputs.
So the whole popular idea of crafting the perfect prompt, you know, spending 3 hours tweaking adjectives and syntax to trick the AI into giving you the right output.
It's essentially a dying skill.
Right.
The models are bridging that communication gap for us.
So the new core competency, as the author defines it, is first principles problem decomposition.
That's the real skill now.
It is the ability to take a massive, undefined problem, break it down into logical, manageable subproblems, and ruthlessly identify which of those subproblems are on the critical path and which are just noise.
You have to clearly define what success looks like in your own mind before you ever type a word into the AI interface.
And software testing is a perfect lens to view this through. The essay uses it as a core example.
Yeah, pre-AI, software testing was an entire highly manual discipline. Teams would sit in meeting rooms, debating coverage thresholds, building elaborate test harnesses from scratch.
And manually writing unit tests for every single function in the code base.
Right. But the AI native approach flips this completely. The human no longer writes the test. Instead, the human's job is to define the system level behavior.
Okay, I want to make sure we are really clear on the mechanics of that. What does defining the system actually look like in practice?
Well, it means the human architect sits down and maps out the absolute invariance of the system.
Invariance, meaning?
Meaning the rules that cannot be broken. For instance, determining that under no circumstances can a user's account balance drop below zero. Mm. Or outlining the exact boundary conditions of a data input. They define the failure modes and the extreme edge cases.
So they do the intense cognitive work of building the logical blueprint.
Exactly. Once that systematic thinking is complete and the parameters are set, they hand that blueprint to the AI. And the AI instantly generates the thousands of lines of code required to actually run those tests.
But wait, let me push back on this for a second, because I know you listening might be wondering the exact same thing.
Sure, go ahead.
If the AI model is so incredibly smart that it can adapt to my messy instructions and infer my intent, why do I need to be so rigorous about defining the system-level behavior? Mm. Can I just open the chat window, type in, hey, analyze my code base and build me a comprehensive testing suite and go get a coffee?
I mean, you could, but the trap there is confusing speed with direction.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
Think of the AI as an Olympic sprinter. It possesses the raw power to run incredibly fast. But if you just fire the starting gun and yell, go run, it has no idea which direction to run.
Right, it's just running blindly.
If you fail to define the system, the edge cases, and the exact constraints of the problem you're trying to solve, the AI will happily sprint in a random direction.
So it'll just do whatever.
It will instantly build you a massive, beautifully formatted, syntactically perfect testing suite that tests entirely the wrong things.
It solves the problem you asked it to solve, but totally ignores the problem you actually have.
David Schell framed this dynamic perfectly. He pointed out that AI's execution capability is already vastly superior to ours in many areas. What is actually being tested in the marketplace today is your ability to orchestrate that capability.
So the execution layer has been commoditized, but the underlying reasoning required to define what needs to be built and what needs to be verified, that hasn't changed one bit.
Not at all. And if you embrace this orchestration mindset, you're going to slam headfirst into what the author calls the 991 paradox.
Right. Schell articulated this phenomenon based on watching his own engineers, didn't he?
Yeah, he noted that AI will complete 99% of the actual work in 1% of the total time. But you, the human architect, will then spend 99% of your time agonizing over that final 1% of detail.
It sounds totally counterintuitive, but the author stresses that once you've lived through a modern AI build cycle, it is the most visceral description of the work.
Oh, absolutely.
You sit down with an idea, you prompt your AI partner, and it gets you to the 98% mark astonishingly fast. The initial architecture is roughed out, the boilerplate code compiles perfectly.
And you look at the clock, realize it's only been 45 minutes for what used to be a grueling week's worth of work, and you feel like an absolute genius.
And then the illusion shatters.
Because you spend the next 4 days trapped in the trenches with that final 1%.
It's always that final 1%.
Yeah.
The edge case that only crashes the application when a user inputs a highly specific string of characters.
Or the user experience flow that technically functions exactly as the AI coded it, but feels subtly jarring and clunky to a human clicking through it.
Yeah. Or the marketing copy the AI generated that is grammatically flawless, but tonally just a little bit cold or robotic.
Or that one obscure environment variable that runs perfectly on your local machine, but triggers a cascading failure the second you try to push it to a live production server.
That excruciating final 1% is where human craftsmanship now lives. AI models can generate infinite variations of code and text, but they cannot tell you which specific edge case is going to frustrate a customer so deeply that they abandon their shopping cart.
The machine doesn't feel the emotional weight of a user onboarding flow.
Here's where it gets really interesting. We're entering what Dario Amodei, the CEO of Anthropic, describes as the Centaur era.
The Centaur era?
Yeah, the mental model isn't human versus machine, like some dystopian sci-fi movie. It's half-human judgment fused seamlessly with half-machine execution.
And the super individual doesn't replace themselves with an AI. They use the AI as an exoskeleton to extend their cognitive reach to a scale that was previously impossible.
And the source material provides a stunning mechanical example of this Centaur approach from David Shell's own workflow.
This is such a cool example. He built a custom AI system designed to analyze the profiles of 1,000 different conference attendees in just 1 or 2 minutes.
Doing that manually, just reading through 1,000 LinkedIn profiles, would take days.
Easily days.
And human fatigue guarantees you'd start skimming and miss the most valuable connections by, like, profile number 50.
Exactly. But notice the mechanics of how Shell built it. He didn't just give the AI a vague prompt like, tell me who I should network with.
Right, because that goes back to the sprinter running in the wrong direction.
Yes. He used his deep human judgment to define the exact parameters of a mutual value exchange. He mapped out the specific B2B pain points his company could solve, the specific industry signals that indicated a high-value prospect, and the exact conversational hooks that would make an introduction feel organic rather than spammy.
So he defined the complex human judgment, and then he orchestrated the AI to apply that specific judgment across 1,000 profiles instantly.
There is another incredible example in the essay that really drives this home, too. An 18-year-old built a functional cardiac arrhythmia detection application using AI tools.
Now wait, this is not a seasoned computer science student. This is not a medical device engineer with a decade of lab experience.
It's an 18-year-old. But they possessed intense domain curiosity, and critically, they knew how to apply systematic thinking to a massive problem.
They didn't just open a chat window and type, make me a heart app.
No, they actively decomposed the medical and technical challenge. They had to figure out the inputs. Like, how do I ingest raw ECG data? What specific waveform anomalies actually constitute an arrhythmia in a clinical sense?
And how do I build a feedback loop to validate those anomalies against known medical baselines?
Exactly. The 18-year-old defined the architectural subproblems. The AI simply handled the heavy lifting of writing the ingestion scripts and the matching algorithms.
Wow. When human effort is squeezed entirely into that final 1%, into the decomposition of problems and the final nuanced judgment calls, it fundamentally rewrites what the free market values.
It really does. When the production of content or code becomes essentially free and infinite, the scarce resource is no longer the ability to produce.
The scarce resource becomes curation. It becomes taste.
Taste, yeah.
The source highlights a quote from David Shell that feels like the defining mantra of this new era. He said, "Human aesthetic value will never be replaced by AI."
In a world where every single person has a machine on their desk that can generate 1,000 different options in a fraction of a second, the only individual who matters is the one who knows which of those 1,000 options is actually good.
The architect who can curate and refine matters exponentially more in an AI-saturated world, not less.
Which exposes an incredibly flawed metric that a lot of massive corporations are leaning into right now. They are attempting to measure their developers' productivity by tracking token consumption.
Wait, token consumption?
Yeah, they are literally evaluating engineers by asking, "How many lines of AI-generated code did you pump out today?"
That is insane. It's like measuring the value of a brilliant novelist by counting how much typewriter ribbon they used.
Exactly. It fundamentally misunderstands the technology. A developer who spends their entire day quietly reasoning through a problem and ultimately writes 50 lines of carefully architected code that solves the exact right bottleneck is vastly more valuable to a company than a developer who mindlessly generates 5,000 lines of what the author calls AI slop.
AI slop that solves the wrong problem at lightning speed.
Right.
So whether you are a software engineer, a marketing director, an event planner, or a financial analyst, your core value proposition to the market is no longer being the printing press.
You aren't valuable because you can churn out pages of material.
Your value is being the master editor who knows which specific draft will actually solve the problem or make the audience feel something.
The author experienced this firsthand with their voice companion app, Mio. The AI code worked perfectly. The persona roleplay functioned exactly as designed.
But the author had to rely on human observation of real users to realize the app was solving the wrong emotional need.
It needed a fundamental pivot away from a novelty roleplay and toward an AI-native companion.
The AI could execute the code for the pivot, but it lacked the aesthetic intuition to realize the pivot was necessary in the first place.
And if taste, curation, and orchestration are the last true moats protecting human capital, the obvious question is how someone actually goes about building those specific skills.
Right, because you don't just wake up with them.
No, you don't. And the author doesn't just leave us with theory here. They share a hard-learned playbook forged through their own friction.
The way the author built PanPanMao and Mio reveals exactly how this mindset shift happens. They learned very quickly that the old startup advice of polishing a product for months is deadly.
Yeah, they fully embraced the concept of shipping ugly. When they launched version one of Mio, it wasn't really a product at all. It was a research instrument.
They realized that you can't theorize about how users will interact with AI. You have to put something raw in their hands and watch where they break it.
They ended up throwing out almost everything from Mio version one. But without that initial friction, they never would have discovered the insights required to build version two.
That ties directly into the economic reality of infinite production. Because the AI makes the cost of building new features so incredibly low, the author learned they had to ruthlessly kill their darlings.
Yeah, when you can build 10 apps in 29 days, you have to be willing to watch seven of them gain zero traction and just throw them in the trash immediately.
Traditional builders get emotionally attached to their code because it took weeks to write. The super individual throws away an entire weekend's worth of AI-generated architecture without a second thought if the market doesn't respond.
They also discovered that problem decomposition is a muscle that only grows through painful trial and error. The author literally keeps a running text document titled, "What Does Done Look Like?" before they allow themselves to start any build.
Which is such a simple but brilliant hack.
They admitted that it isn't glamorous work, but every single time they tried to skip that architectural step and just start prompting the AI, they ended up wasting entire days going in circles, generating code that didn't connect.
The playbook also highlights the ultimate trap for smart people right now, which is benchmark shopping.
Oh, this is so common. There are thousands of highly intelligent professionals wasting their weeks arguing on social media about whether the newly released GPT-5 model scores 3% higher on some obscure coding leaderboard than the newest Claude model.
And while they sit around debating benchmarks, they are shipping absolutely nothing to the real world.
Exactly. The compute power is already heavily subsidized. The tools are already magical and improving daily. Arguing over incremental benchmark percentages is just a sophisticated form of procrastination.
It prevents you from engaging with the technology. It is the difference between being an AI commentator and an AI user.
Yeah, you can memorize all the newsletters. You can give a brilliant 45-minute TED Talk to your friends over dinner about the impending revolution of autonomous AI agents.
But if you haven't actually opened an interface and built something with them, you are entirely missing the boat. The gap between reading an article about problem decomposition and actually sitting down to orchestrate parallel tasks to solve a real problem is massive.
You cannot learn to be a super individual from the bleachers. You have to stop spectating.
Orchestration, systematic thinking, the refinement of taste. These are not passive skills you could just download into your brain by listening to a breakdown of an essay.
You only acquire them through the friction of making things and watching them fall apart.
So what does this all mean for you listening right now?
It means we have definitively crossed the threshold. We are moving out of the era where executors were highly prized and stepping fully into the era of the architect.
The tools required to build almost anything you can imagine are already sitting on your laptop.
And the immense computing power required to run those tools is practically being given away. The barrier to entry to build a product, launch a service, or solve a complex problem has never been lower in human history.
The only remaining differentiator in the marketplace is you. Your taste, your human judgment, and your ability to think systematically.
Which leaves us with a really fascinating, almost philosophical paradox to chew on as we wrap up today.
Yeah, this part really stuck with me.
The author explicitly notes that true taste comes from the struggle of making things and watching them break. It is forged in friction.
But if these AI models continue to accelerate, getting so good that they shield us from those early, painful mistakes.
If they generate highly polished, syntactically perfect, even if slightly uninspired work, right out of the gate.
How will the next generation of builders ever experience the breaking? How do they endure the friction that is fundamentally required to develop true taste in the first place?
If the magic wand removes all the struggle, are we at risk of losing the very environment that creates human aesthetic judgment?
It is something to seriously think about the next time you find yourself deeply frustrated, agonizing over that final 1%. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Now go out there, open up an empty repository, and start orchestrating. We'll see you next time.